Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online, kpcg.fm, and the trumpet.com has a live link coming up in this weekend edition. If you have plans this weekend, might be interested to know that there are some actual terror threats that the media is concerned about. We'll have some details about that. Also, Father's Day is coming up. Some really interesting gifts you might be considering. Also, late shows and politics. It's a changing landscape. And a look at a new anti-war movie. That and more. This edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio. We're at 101.3 KPCG and kpcg.fm online. Also, we have a live link at thetrumpet.com. Please follow us at Twitter if you'd like to at kpcgfm. You can email us any comments or anything else to comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau here today. Nice weekend ahead for those of us in the local listening area. And going to get up into the 90s, supposedly. Can you believe it? I don't know if that's the first time this year, but we haven't been up. We haven't been too hot this spring. It's been kind of refreshing.
Yeah, it's been a really mild season so far, and it's been nice not sweating to death and not soaking in your own filth, basically, when you're walking around, not even doing anything.
Well, that's a little bleaker than I was going for. But
sorry,
yeah.
It's a little extreme.
It is what you are from a colder climate. It is tougher to deal with the heat, but so it should be a pretty decent weekend overall. What is interesting, though, is there is a Drudge Report had some headlines about potential terror threats that they think are worth looking at. They think it's credible. They say a legitimate Islamic State group propaganda video posted on social media last week features brief footage of the Las Vegas Strip while calling for lone wolf terrorist attacks, and Las Vegas police are treating it as a credible threat. They say the video is about 44 minutes long, which is unusual because Islamic State group propaganda videos are often much shorter, according to a representative for the intelligence group that did the report. Similar shorter Islamic State group propaganda videos are posted daily, the representative said. So they're seeing a lot of these, but they had a video footage of the Strip in there. Obviously, that's tourist city. And they're saying, look, just be careful because it is, they think, a potentially legitimate threat.
And just considering the location, too, and knowing what terrorists think of America, how we're the great Satan, that's a place where a lot of things go on that they probably are disgusted by, and that would make sense if they try to attack that place.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, we hope nothing like that ever happens, but they do. I mean, they're reporting it, so, you know, as a main news. And they very often don't talk about a lot of the threats, probably because they don't want to stir up more trouble than necessary, but they felt it necessary to do that. A related headline to that, the DHS, Department of Homeland Security chief, said, "You'd never leave your house with my terror info." So in other words, if you knew what I knew, you wouldn't leave your house. That's not great.
Yeah, it's amazing how well the intelligence agencies know about the activities, and they're on a much broader scope than what the public knows. And it's a good thing they only reveal a little bit of information to us, because it probably would cause panic or just a lot of discontent with how the government's handling it. But at the same time, they do keep us safe, and there are lots of threats out there we never hear about because they stop them before they even have a chance to materialize.
Right. You don't want to cause panic in the public unnecessarily, but then again, you do have to warn at some point. So, but I don't know. I was trying to think, have we ever heard of there being a legitimate threat that actually materialized? Isn't it usually kind of catching people by surprise when something does occur?
Usually, because it seems like we have a lot of capabilities for stopping things that we know are about to take place. It has to be pretty much by surprise. That guy's quote, though, that gave me visual of like a sniper on every rooftop and then them burrowed under the ground directly under where we're walking. That doesn't sound too nice at all.
Yeah, and that's, he felt comfortable making that comment. So, you know, I don't know what the situation was in which he made it, but that's a, it's a main headline today on some main websites. So it's out there. It's interesting. The media, of course, as we've talked about, and there's been a lot of studies about, they really are coming after President Trump a fair bit. And, of course, politicians that are liberal are really coming after him as well. Sometimes there's probably a legitimate issue. Other times, not so much. One particular politician, who I shall not name, complained that President Trump is not visiting countries in alphabetical order. It's an outrage. It's an outrage of the highest order. If that's the best you can come up with, it's not so bad.
I guess it makes it seem like Mr. Trump has certain countries that he views as more important to visit,
yeah,
instead of, you know, the utopianist view that all countries are exactly the same and equal.
I think there is something to that. The quote is this. This politician says, I thought it was unusual for the president of the United States to go to Saudi Arabia first. Saudi Arabia? It wasn't even alphabetical. I mean, Saudi Arabia. So, that's the quote.
Is he joking or no?
No.
Oh.
It's a lady, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I think President...
Well, that narrows it down a lot then.
It does, yeah.
Didn't President Obama go to Egypt for his first one?
They did go to... Yeah, they do have a list of the past three or four presidents, and they all went to different countries. As this article points out, if President Trump were to begin visiting foreign countries in alphabetical order, he would have to go to Afghanistan, followed by Albania, then Algeria, Andorra, and Angola in that order. So I don't think that's how they come up with where they're going. I'm pretty sure he went there because we have a lot of oil situations with them, and they are really a power in the Middle East, and that's a very volatile area. That's my guess.
Yeah.
I don't think it had anything to do with the alphabet. But
yeah, I've seen lots of criticisms about Trump's trip to Saudi Arabia and then to NATO yesterday. Plenty of GIFs of him shoving the president of Montenegro out of the way to get in front.
And that glowing orb that they all put their hands on.
So, I mean, I've seen plenty of conspiracy theories, things saying that that glowing orb is like Satan worshiping, all types of different things.
Wow.
But I never thought I'd hear something about visiting countries in alphabetical order.
Yeah, that's kind of reaching. It seems like a little bit, but anyway, that was the complaint. I guess though, if you're in politics and you are going to be open to criticism, that's not so bad. If that's the worst that you get, that's okay.
Yeah, not too bad at all. Obviously, you have to visit countries in order of importance, because if he waited to go in alphabetical order, it could be a couple of years before he gets to Saudi Arabia. And obviously, that was something that he considered to be a groundbreaking trip in terms of trying to stop terrorism. If he waited, then clearly terrorism is not on his priority list. It's not something that he really considers stopping.
Yeah, it's really kind of a silly comment. The this is a book out. It's kind of interesting. I think it's got an interesting point in it. It's called The Sum of Small Things. Take off on another saying, I guess. They say, in the late 19th century, the economist Thorstein Veblen famously skewered members of the upper class for trying to telegraph their social status by surrounding themselves with luxury goods, a phenomenon he dubbed conspicuous consumption. And so, but we were familiar with that. Oh, you got to show how wealthy you are by buying your fancy car or whatever. They say today it's changed a little bit. People now are trying to drive electric cars instead of SUVs, buying organic produce. And it says, while these are financial choices, the author argues that they are driven primarily by an aspiration to be, or at least appear to be, quote, their version of better humans. And so it's the same sort of thinking, they're saying, trying to, be a better version of a human, maybe not through spending a ton of money necessarily, but by buying into certain lifestyle choices, you know, climate-related issues. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's an interesting take that it's a new sort of conspicuous consumption.
Yeah, I think it brings up a good point, because, of course, everyone, especially in America, they despise the aristocracy especially of Great Britain, where everyone had Rolls Royces and they lived in huge country homes and that kind of lifestyle they had. And you had to have certain things in order to be accepted. You had to have a certain size house. You had to do this and that, have a servant serving food and that sort of thing. Today, the motivation is the same. It's the desire to be seen doing something, to be a part of a clique, or like a unique group mm-hmm. of society. But now it's more about your behavior or buying into different maybe political beliefs, scientific beliefs, yeah. rather than just acquiring a physical possession. It's about basically an idea now rather than a physical thing.
And in a lot of cases, those things are represented by a particular physical possession.
Yes.
Except instead of the Rolls Royce, now it's the organic tomato, which I'm not down on organic food. It's really good. It's good to have stuff that's healthy for you. So that's not the point. But it's an interesting look at how people are still trying to identify themselves with a certain group. It's probably human nature. And trying to be this better version of humans by maybe being more, again, subscribing to a new sort of thought, like, looking out for the climate or something like that. But the motivations are still the same. In a lot of cases, it's just trying to be cool at the end of the day.
That's called virtue signaling, where you walk around trying to let everyone know how good you are at, you know, preserving the environment or, you know, conserving resources, whatever the latest pet cause is. And it's a really high level of self-righteousness to go around acting like you're better than everyone else just because you follow a certain trend.
I just wear a t-shirt that says, "Get a load of me."
You might as well. It's the same thing.
I have one that says, "Get a load of this."
Get a load of this. Yeah. It's a general. It could be a lot of things. that's a tremendous segue, by the way, into this next write-up. Father's Day is coming, and so if you're a father, you might get something. It happens. Sometimes. 15 Father's Day gifts and cards for the Star Wars loving dad in your life. We talked about Star Wars yesterday, 40-year anniversary, so some people really, really like Star Wars. These are kind of interesting. Here's a mug that says, "Ah, coffee, the dad awakens." Instead of the Force Awakens, of course. I like that one. $13.70, by the way. Go ahead and I wouldn't mind having that. Here, there's, and then some are confusing, so I'll just skip them. I don't know what they mean. This one is a t-shirt that says, "Good dad, start with episode 4. So I'm guessing they want you to start watching them in a particular order.
Yeah, episode 4 is the first old one, A New Hope. And so it's kind of a bash on the first three. First three, the next three, episodes 1 through 3, because they're not that
good. Why did they do that? That just causes so much confusion.
It does.
I can never figure it out.
Yeah, it takes me half the movie to figure out where we are in time. Like, I feel like I need, a pamphlet ahead of time to just kind of read up on where we're going. This one is a card, and it's got Darth Vader on the front, and it says, "I am your father, ... Z day card." That's funny. $4.59 if you can afford it. Here are cookies that say, "Yoda best dad." And it's a picture of Yoda. I'd eat it. It's not a bad gift. There's a mug with an Ewok on it, and it says, "Best father in the galaxy." Fair enough. It's not really funny, but this one's really funny. It's a card with a Darth Vader in the front. He's grilling out. He has an apron on that says, "Number one dad." And he has his hand extended, and he says, "Join me, and together we can rule the grill." So if you're familiar with the movies, I think you'll appreciate some of those. A Yoda wine bottle bag. It says Yoda best. I guess that's the thing, so that's okay. This one is a heart string puller. There's a picture of a small stormtrooper, and it says, "Happy Father's Day from your little trooper."
Aww.
So that's a nice one. It was funny because I was reading these before, and I told my wife, I said, it's weird because it kind of snuck up on me, a couple of them. Like, it almost choked me up a little bit, and I'm like, what in the world? You can tell when you're getting to be a dad or you are a dad, because those things sneak up on you sometimes.
Yeah. Speaking of Father's Day and Star Wars, there was I heard a fan theory once that because you don't know that Darth Vader is anyone's father for a long time in the movies. Well, the original ones. But they say you can...
Spoiler alert, by the way.
Sorry, yes. Sorry,
ruined it
Grant.
For me.
Yeah, sorry, Grant. I thought you watched them all last night. But
no, that's fine. I did.
But that you know Darth Vader is a father because he makes dad jokes. All the jokes he make are like dad jokes. So you can like... or at least some of them. So you can kind of foresee that he is a father, even yeah. though he doesn't know he...
yeah, odd puns and things.
Yeah.
We saw one the other day where he was... choking a guy and he said don't choke on your own aspirations.
Yeah.
That's kind of something like a dad would say. Hopefully minus the choking action.
Yeah.
There's another shirt with Vader and it says number one dad in the galaxy, so that one's okay. This one's I don't like this one, but I'll just mention it. It's got a picture of Darth Vader and it says I suppose you're not the worst father in the world. That's a low blow. I don't like that one at all.
Yeah. It's a low blow against a father and Darth Vader.
I guess it's intended to be funny, but that doesn't hit for me. So
is it saying that Darth Vader is at least worse
yes,
than him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think they're trying to be funny, but I don't. How would you feel if you got that? You'd be like, "What are you taking a shot at me?
Yeah.
I mean, what is this? What is this all about?" A T-shirt that says, "Some people call me Dad, but I prefer Jedi Master." That's one you don't want your dad wearing to like
yeah.
the ballpark. Right? But somebody will buy that. And yeah, that's pretty much, those are pretty much the ones. There's little odds and ends here and there. But yeah, interesting Star Wars fan. If it's your father, you might be interested in those.
Yeah. If the Jedi Master T-shirt, if you did get that and he wears it around town, you might get a treat to some live action role play.
Yes.
If another dad has the same
shirt. Right.
They'll have to test their skills.
Yeah. So. You think you're the Jedi Master? We'll prove this out here.
Go to the parking lot and prove this right now.
That's the, for those that might have seen a Seinfeld episode over the years, the guy's wearing the number one dad T-shirt, which is very common, and somebody challenges him. You think you're the number one dad? So they have a contest to see who the number one dad is. So anyway, those are some interesting. Oh, I like this T-shirt too, one more. The Force is strong with this dad.
Nice.
That can mean a lot of things, so I'm not really sure if that's a positive or a negative. I'll assume it's a positive. So anyway, again, if you have a Star Wars loving father, you might consider some of those. Are you guys interested in any of those?
I think my dad's only watched Star Wars to comment on it a couple times. Either what am I doing with my life that I'm watching it, or he's like, yeah, I would fight against them because they're so evil. See, it's made a passing comment, walked away. So I doubt he would, I would be getting those. Or for him. I'm not a father yet, so I can. Father's Day is gift free for me.
No gifts for you. Yeah. This is an interesting story. Kind of fascinating, too. A ghost ship washes ashore in Florida. Beachgoers got a big surprise Wednesday morning when a barge was found washed ashore on a beach in Panama City, Florida. U.S. Coast Guard went to the scene at St. Andrew State Park where they found the barge vessel resting against the shore after a night of stormy weather. According to the Panama City News Herald, they said the barge broke free from its cables while it was being towed by another ship. So they just wake up one day, go down to the beach like normal, and there's a giant ship there with nobody on it. That's awesome. But they know where it came from, so it's not that big of a mystery, but still kind of cool.
Yeah. Those are always kind of, well, those are the themes for lots of books and movies, a ghost ship. But reminds me, I was watching a documentary on the Bermuda Triangle, and a Navy patrol came across an abandoned sailboat in the middle of Bermuda Triangle. And it was, no one was on it. It was just listless in the middle of the ocean or the sea. So they, sailors manned it and they brought it back to Florida. But they still don't know what happened to the crew. They just were gone, nothing in the log or anything.
Yeah, that the Bermuda Triangle is strange. I guess the documentaries I've seen, they tend to think is because the compass equipment, GPSs get kind of messed with because of just the location, I guess. So people get confused and turned around or something. Is that what you've heard?
Yeah, it's there must be some kind of disruption in the gravitational field. Or magnetic field.
Magnetic, yeah. They float off into space.
Yes.
gravity.
The gravity shoots them in the opposite direction. Because the compass gets messed up or their instruments don't work anymore. So they, just a lot of crashes or things because they just can't fly in certain conditions.
Yeah, there's a place up in Wisconsin, which is, of course, got the Great Lakes right around it. It's Door County, and it's named that because the little passageway there is called Death's Door because there's so many shipwrecks. So it's kind of cool. I mean, it's neat history, and I always like things like that. Not the fact that they were wrecks, but it's just neat history. Yeah. Key David program's coming up this weekend. It's a new one here on KPCG. Psalm 37:4, All the Desires of Your Heart. A really great program. Make sure you check that out. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that. Trumpet Hour Week in Review program as well. You guys ever watch Price is Right?
Yes.
Very entertaining show.
Yeah. I've seen it. It's been on for years. Years and years.
Yeah.
Drew Carey, he's the host now. Oh, by the way, we're about to get into our celebrity segment. Because we have, not that we intended this, but we have like three stories or so in a row here that all have to do with celebrities. Not directly, but they tie in. So we don't normally get into that, but we will. So anyway, start out with Price is Right. This guy, the game Plinko. That's where they drop the thing, and it's my favorite game on that show because you don't have to worry about how much detergent costs. Drop the chip and see where it lands, so it's neat. This guy set a record the other day. His name is Ryan, a contestant from Philadelphia. His first chip landed on $10,000, which is rare. And then his next chip landed on $1,000, then $10,000, then $500, then another $10,000.
Oh.
He had won $31,500. That's the all-time record for Plinko.
And then they stopped him from playing. They could not spare any more cash.
Kicked him out of the country. That's a lot of money for a Drew Carey to have in his pocket. they come up there. They always say, hey, you know, take the $100 if they get it right. But yeah, I mean, that game is just fun. I've always liked that one. And so the guy won a lot of money. That's pretty rare to land three different chips on $10,000.
Yeah, that's I do like that show because it's it pretty honest type game, and it's I don't know, it's just kind of fun to watch most of the time.
It is amazing when you see people like just insanely miss a price.
Yeah,
you know they have like the final showcase, you know, dinette set, Ford Fusion.
Yeah.
Trip to the Bahamas, and they're like, $120,000. I know they overinflate the prices, you know, but you can hear the audience. And then the next guy's like, $1?
Yeah.
Because he knows he's going to win everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you can't go over the price, so it's pretty easy if someone goes way off like that to get it right.
Well, and they do that too, where one person has a chance to win like the dream one for guys like us probably. You know, you get two ATVs, a car, a trip, and then the next person, again, it's like a dinette set and a Lazy Boy.
Yeah.
I'm like, can I have the ATVs? So it's always interesting how they do that and play that game. It's kind of fun to watch. Grant, you've got an interesting write-up for us from the New York Times. Jimmy Fallon, you might know him from, he's been a comedian for years. He's on the Tonight Show. Jimmy Fallon was on the top of the world, it says, then came Trump. And now his rival, Stephen Colbert, has shot to the top.
Yeah, poor guy. All he's been trying to do is stay out of politics, and now he's being attacked for it because he actually had a respectful interview with Mr. Trump. A lot of leftists now blame that single interview for getting Mr. Trump elected, for basically humanizing an extreme candidate, they say, because there was a part even where he playfully ruffled Mr. Trump's hair to make sure that it was real hair and not a wig. And they talked about, you know, why should a kid want to be president? Nice questions like that, instead of him being asked all the hard-hitting political questions that for some reason they think that a late night show host should be asking now.
Well, it's such a change in the media's and the viewers' reaction to him. When the Obamas were in office and they came on the show, he played games with them and did a lot of stuff that some people probably didn't like. It maybe a little beneath the office in some ways. But people were fine with it because they didn't want anything being asked. Oh, that was hard hitting. They wanted dance contests, which is what they got. And now he's doing the same thing. He does it because that's his deal. He's not a hard hitting political commentator. He wants to play games and have an entertaining show. Maybe a little on the juvenile side, but okay, you know, fair enough. That's the show. And all of a sudden they want him to grill this President Trump. It's ridiculous that they would want that. He's never been that way, and that's not what his show's about.
Right. He had Hillary Clinton on there, too, and he didn't grill her either, but no one's complaining about that. He even let her try to do a voice impression of Mr. Trump. So why is it that they're only singling out Mr. Trump for hard-hitting questions. He's just a Jimmy Fallon's a really likable guy, and yet it just really wouldn't fit into his personality to try to go along with the trend of the political commentary.
Right, he is very personable, and he tries to be very nice to everyone that comes on. From what I've seen, I don't watch it a lot, but I've seen a few clips, and he's. Yeah, it's superficial, but that's what the show is. It's very surfacey, and they're playing games and having fun. But again, like we talked about the other day, isn't it such a reflection of society now that people have turned away from that and they want to watch another show where they get extremely political and very crude to the point where the FCC almost had to come in but then decided not to? Because I don't know what you'd have to do these days to get the FCC on your case, really, on some of those shows. But yet the ratings have gone up. It's a reflection of, like, the hosts haven't changed, but the people's appetites changed.
Yeah, it does show there has been a lot of emotion after the election and a lot of people who are so angry about the results that they are hoping to just hear an hour and a half show that just smashes the president the entire time. That didn't always used to be that way. And Stephen Colbert was even struggling on his show on CBS until Mr. Trump got elected. So really, Stephen Colbert should be happy.
Yeah, it's definitely helped him out a lot. It is very interesting to see, even in just if you look at the major news outlets, cable news, well, Fox had ruled the air for a while. Now they're in the bottom of the top three anyway. And then CNN kind of sits there like they do. And now MSNBC is popular, which it wasn't before. But it's just because they have that same... I haven't watched them in a long time, so I can't be too specific, I guess. But when I've seen them in the past, they're very much a liberal, and I don't think they hide that at all. That's their take. And they get pretty sarcastic about a lot of things. And the numbers are going up. So it's interesting. I mean, in a way, President Trump coming in, it's given them something to go after daily, which they do. And it's actually, they're actually getting... better ratings because of it. So they should thank him in some ways. They need sort of a guy to go after. And they haven't had that for the last 8 years, and now they have it. And it's actually helping their business.
Yeah, it is. That makes you wonder, can they truly be upset about the election when they're getting rich off of what happened? Maybe they are still upset, but at least it's having some benefits for them. But you would be shocked just how many comments on that story said they're never going to watch Jimmy Fallon's show ever again, or anything he's ever involved in. They're never going to watch it just because he had one polite interview.
Well, I think it serves as a warning to people that are in those positions that the liberal press can turn on you, because he was a darling of the press for a while, Jimmy Fallon. People really liked his show, but once something happened that they didn't think was in line with their politics, they flipped the whole thing on him. And I feel bad for the guy in that way, because he's like, well, what do you want me to do? I just do dance. I have dance contests and sing-offs. I'm not, that's not my job. But yet he's getting eaten up for it.
Yeah, it's just this week I've been listening to a bunch of old interviews of different people, kind of where these kind of shows came from, like Dick Cavett and other people, where it was kind of like lighthearted interviews. But you can see how much they've changed, where it was just about learning about someone famous, like talking with them about their life, lighthearted, so you didn't have to watch the news. It was a good, because that was like Vietnam and a lot of hard news. Yeah. It was like an alternative. You didn't have to watch the hard news, something you can enjoy a little bit more. But yeah, Now it's almost like the opposite. People don't want to watch the real news because they're sick of they don't know if it's fake news or not, so they're turning to the comedy shows. They're supposed to be alternative, but now they're like the news shows, and it's just kind of a weird transformation in the industry.
Yeah. Well, of course, Johnny Carson is the legend, right? Probably nobody did it better than him. But he was, their whole take on that show was people are going to bed. That's the time it's on. So people might flip on the TV before they go to bed. They want something light, something to kind of laugh at, not to forget about the cares of the day and drift off into a blissful sleep. Like, that was their job. That's what they were trying to do. But now they're trying to be I don't know who you'd say. They're trying to be the hard-hitting, gotcha news reporters, and it's an entertainment show.
Yeah.
it's an odd thing.
Yeah, it's and I'm amazed that some of these comedians even had a show. I mean, maybe I'm Canadian. I don't get American humor as much. But
do you think John Candy was funny?
Yes.
So did I.
So did I.
Just, you know, he's Canadian, right?
Yeah.
He was really funny.
But I mean, in Canada, we have like we have this hour has 30 minutes, and it's like a news Canadian parody of news, and it's pretty funny, and they make fun of politicians, but it's pure parody. It's nothing new.
Right.
It's news. And so it's just really interesting just to see how these personalities who really have no credibility, they have no authority on anything except comedy, how they're suddenly looked to as authoritative figures for some very, very important aspects of American democracy.
Yeah, and there's a really, really fascinating kind of thought about all of this that I've seen a few people bring up. And that is, first of all, they're pushing pretty progressive ideas in some ways, as they would see them. And they're trying to disarm you with humor. Like, oh, ha, it's a joke, but we're serious about this and that. And somebody interviewed the Daily Show, the original guy, Stewart, was
John,
his name?
John Stewart.
John Stewart.
John Stewart. Yeah. And they were kind of asking him. It was after he was done with the show, and they said, look, more millennials, at least, are watching your show for news than are actually watching the news. Do you have responsibility in what you're doing, what you're saying? And at that point, he said, nope, I'm just a comedian. See, that they got this, they have this sort of, I can shove off all responsibility. I can say whatever I want. And then when somebody says, wait a second, you know, do you hold responsibility for what you're saying? Hey, I'm just a comedian. So, but you can't do that, I don't think, because you are influencing people. And it is being presented like, yeah, we're going to laugh about it, but I am giving you some profound truth about the situation. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as there's accountability or a call for it, hey, I'm just kidding around. We've all done that, haven't we, in our personal lives? You say something, somebody says, hey, why'd you say that? Hey, I'm just joking, man.
Right.
Because you're trying to get out of it. I think that's what they're doing.
And that's why so many people are upset, because they need to have absolute control over what the media puts out, what all the loudest voices who people are listening to are saying. They need to all be saying the same thing. It seems like Jimmy Fallon was the last one who hasn't gotten too political. I mean, I don't think Conan O'Brien is a little bit more than Jimmy Fallon is, but now Jimmy Fallon, a lot of his show has changed. It's almost like he has been bullied into joking more about the president.
Yeah, and that's money talks and ratings talk, and so it is interesting to look at it, because you know, as a host, you would be put in that position where you've got to say stuff, even if you don't agree with it, because that's what people want to hear. So you have to wonder, okay, well, how free is the press at this point?
Well, it does go beyond even just joking about the president, too, because Jimmy Fallon has impersonated Mr. Trump many times, and he's had a lot of jokes in his monologue about the president. The thing was, it wasn't cutting and serious enough. That's actually what they're expecting as well. It's not like he never touched the president or, you know, hit him at any time. It's just, it has to be serious, because people need to know, well, it's not even just a joke anymore. Literally, you're supposed to believe exactly what we're saying on these comedy shows.
Mm, it is. It is an interesting thing to see it change. It's hard, you know, when you're on the top and then all of a sudden things flip on you. You know, Fox News is going through that right now, where they're, well, they've got rid of the people, they got rid of the personalities people liked. And the, I think the way of reporting news that people liked. So you're going to suffer for it.
True, but I do think Tucker Carlson's been on fire recently.
Oh, really?
So it's almost like he's stepping it up just even in the last couple of weeks, because that guy really, even his show, the show quality's gone up, and the guests he's brought on have been pretty serious people.
Mm. It takes a while to hit your groove, especially if you're new and that type of thing. So really interesting. That's from the New York Times. Jimmy Fallon was on top of the world, then came President Trump. I'm in bed at those times, so I don't have to worry about it too much.
Yeah, exactly.
He was on top of the world, and then came bedtime. I can't stay up that late. I'm going to work the next day. It's always funny to me, too, because they record those in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But they're always trying to refer to it like it is that time of day. And it's funny when there's something that's going to happen that night, but they can't really comment on it, like a sport contest, because they don't know who wins yet. Sometimes maybe they go live, but they make it seem like it is 10:30 at night, or, you know, whatever the time is. And but, you know, it's probably 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So they got they're deceiving us all. Abraham, you've got a write up here from The Verge. Google's AlphaGo AI, artificial intelligence, is about to face off against the world's best Go player. What are they talking about with Go here? Is that that Pokemon, or is it something different?
No, this is Go is a Chinese board game.
Okay.
And it's you might have seen it, it's a wooden board with 19 by 19 with white and black stones.
Okay, I have seen it.
And
had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've seen
and
it.
Basically it's just a strategy game where you're trying to win the most area over the board. So in other words, if your stones, whatever color stone surrounds the other player's stones or a part of the board, that they count. It's a little more complex, but that's how they figure out who wins.
If it was much more complex, I would be completely lost. But yes, go ahead.
But it's a game that goes back to a few thousand years, and it first was discovered by Europeans, I think, in the 15th century. So it's a very, very old game. And it's a Chinese game, so all the top players are from China, most of them. And Deep Blue, we reported on this originally, but Deep Blue beat one of the best players in the world in 2014.
And that's the supercomputer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it was the first time an AI player beat a human, or at least a top human. The AI for chess games beat me all the time. So so it's the first time the AI beat a top player, one of the best in the world. And so this time what they're going to do is AlphaGo, which is Google's creation, they're going to play against Qiji. I think that's how you say his name. He's a top Chinese player in the world, top number one in the world, 19 years old. And they're going to have a three-game tournament to see who comes out on top, whether it's the artificial intelligence or the human.
Hmm. That's always it's always fascinating. Some people are really, really good at these games, obviously. I haven't met anybody of that level. But, you know, you sit down sometimes, you play, hey, you want to play chess? And okay. And then the guy, you know, knows how to play.
Yeah.
And I've done that, you know, where a guy's like, I'm going to beat you in four, you know, five moves, whatever. And then they just do it systematically. So some people are really, really good at that. And but it's interesting because it seems like the computer should win, because if it's, I don't know, I mean, if there's only so many options, it seems like you should program it to always make the right decision.
Right.
I'm no programmer, so that, yeah, that's real easy to do, right? But, you know, there is human error could come in. The computer is not going to get tired. It's not going to start thinking about something else. It's not going to, it just, you know, computes those numbers. So I'm always surprised, actually, when the humans do win at times.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see how AI is dominating and changing, but how much development they had to put into the computer to beat the human in the first place. I mean, these are supercomputers; they're million dollars have gone into developing these sort of things. It's taken many years to get to the point where they can even compete with these players, and I think that's just a testament to the human mind that it takes millions of dollars in a supercomputer just to compete with a human.
Right, and the humans had to build the computer in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
To do it.
The brain is by far the most sophisticated computer, if you will, ever created, and mankind can't create something even close to it.
It's growing.
Yeah.
All the time.
It's growing, and it can create. It can not only learns, but it creates things, and that's something computers really can't do.
There was another story today, and I didn't, again, I just read it kind of in passing, so I'm sure there's a lot there I didn't get about it, but kind of relating to the mind. And they're learning more about the way the mind, they say it eats itself, which is really weird. But they were talking about how basically it, like, it's regenerating, it's getting rid of old stuff and making new stuff. And they compared it to furniture. Like, you got an old piece of furniture that's all dusty and needs to be repaired and painted. Like, you go do that, and your brain's sort of doing that with, like, old thoughts, old ideas. It's always like recycling. So it is an amazing machine.
And that's something that a lot of people wonder about. It really does capture the imagination, just how powerful the human mind could be. There have been movies, I think even relatively recently a movie came out, just kind of wondering what would happen if a person could harness 100% of the mind. And immediately that person was able to speak like every language and teleport and all that stuff, which I don't really think that would be possible if just by accessing your entire mind's capabilities, but still, that does show that there is a lot of power there, and a lot of people do wonder exactly how far that power could go.
Yeah, and we do a lot of times limit ourselves, and sometimes because we just don't need, like, we've talked about this before, and it gets back to, like, the technology. You don't have to remember a bunch of phone numbers because you can just look them up on your phone, or you don't have to remember directions because you can just MapQuest it. There's a lot of things that we just don't do anymore because we don't have to. Some cases it's probably good, but in other cases we probably, you know, aren't working that brain muscle as much as we should, and it's potentially weaker in general because of it.
People used to memorize the Bible, not verses, the entire Bible,
right,
or at least entire chapters or books of it, because they didn't have the printing capabilities or the ability to walk around and have the Bible out in public without being persecuted for it. Clearly, we can do a lot more than we give ourselves credit for.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always interesting when you're working with kids, like, you know, with my kids, and they'll take a test in school or something, and if it comes back and it wasn't, you know, quite what we were hoping, typically I say, well, you know, why did this happen? And usually the answer is, well, I couldn't remember the stuff, and fair enough, but I always say, and then I'll ask a random question about something they're interested in, and they can recite volumes to me. Then I would say, well, okay, you can remember. I see that you have a capability here to recall. And they, at first that would catch them. Now they know the trick. So they're like, yeah, I got the point. But it does show what we can do if we put our minds to certain things.
Yeah, it is a testament to just, it's still a tool that the humans have been given that we can't be bettered. We don't know how to better it. And I think that's kind of what this goes into is, how does AI fit into our world?
Allen Iverson.
Yes.
That's what I thought of when I first saw it. Yeah.
The answer is playing basketball in Turkey. But
that would be the ultimate thing. AI versus AI. Artificial intelligence versus Allen Iverson.
In basketball.
How come Reebok never used that? They sponsored him. They should have used that as like
really
a commercial. That would have been nice.
Yeah, that's anyway. True. Him playing basketball against robots or something.
AI versus AI. Nice.
Yeah. That's a marketing strategy 10 years too late.
Dude, he's coming back, though, so, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, they're just saying how what's interesting, and the CEO of Google has said that this Deep Blue and AlphaGo, they're helping human players get better because they're starting to realize they have to get their level to the next game, and they can analyze what the computer does, and it changes the way humans play. Because apparently in these tournaments, the AlphaGo computer made moves that left people puzzled. They're like, why did they put the stone there? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And later in the game, it turned out to be like the decisive turning point.
Yeah.
So humans are starting to adapt our strategy too, based on what the deep or AlphaGo is doing. And it's just really fascinating to see how humans are. Once we figure out the strategy, our brains can adapt and find a way to beat it eventually. So it'll be interesting to see if Kiji, the player, can overcome whatever strategies AlphaGo has.
Yeah, that is really the difference, right, between us, our minds, and say a computer. A computer kind of is where it is. And it's not probably going to... That's what they're always trying to do, is make something that can learn. And they're not able to do it very well, thankfully, because that would be terrifying. Sometimes I feel like my smartphone is doing that, because I have a health app I put some information into, and it'll... Like, well, first of all, it harps on me all the time. Like, you need to be more active. I'm like, I know. I've had a busy day. I have an argument with it. But, like, you know, I start typing in something that I ate, and it gives me a bunch of options, and it's like the right option. I'm like, how did you know that's what I, like, a very specific type of food that I haven't entered before?
Yeah.
So my phone might be learning about me. But no, in all seriousness, the computers are kind of set where they are, but we can find a way to adapt. So the guy might lose, but then he'll probably come back and figure out a way to win.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, is that even if AlphaGo wins for the next few years, it will change the way humans play, and eventually they'll have to build a whole new computer to beat the new generation of Go players. They'll probably figure out a way to beat how the computer plays the game.
If this guy wins, what's his name?
Kiji.
Kiji, that's a great name. If he wins, I hope that he looks at the computer and then, like, goes over and pulls the plug out and says, Alpha, stop. That would be epic.
Yeah.
It would live in the annals of history. I need to contact him. You don't know me, sir, but we've got one other story here. This is interesting. It's got a celebrity in it again. The Washington Post. It says, I took an Afghan war vet to Brad Pitt's bad anti-military movie. He liked it. War Machine. They say acknowledges that not all soldiers are heroes. So I don't know anything about this movie or what angle this writer is taking or what your take is on it. So I'm very interested.
Yeah, it's War Machine. It comes out today, I think, on Netflix.
Okay, is it not? It's not a theater release, or
I'm not too sure.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the only release dates I saw were for Netflix. Okay. And so it's a. It's really interesting concept. Basically, Brad Pitt, he's the actor. He's Stanley McChrystal, the general who was in charge of Afghanistan for a number of years. And the movie shows how it was the American military's fault that the war in Afghanistan failed and that they didn't win the war. And it displays McChrystal as someone who has a lot of hubris, vanity, very detached from Washington, and how his leadership and the troops' point of view kind of helped turn the war against them. So that's the take the movie takes, that it was the military's fault. And what's interesting is his Afghan vet, he served a tour there for 2 years, and he liked it because he said, we do have to acknowledge the military's mistakes. And then Martin Dempsey, he's a general, he saw it too, and he had some interesting comments I'll get to later. But I think, just a comment on the movie accuracy first, the journalist who saw it with the Afghan vet, he didn't like it because it displayed McChrystal as a very vain person when in real life he's not. He's very humble. And Brad Pitt has a line there where he says, we can't protect them and not kill them. We have to choose one or the other, basically. And McChrystal wasn't like that. He hated that Americans had to basically humiliate Afghan men, like search them and break into their houses and try to get them. He hated that that's what they had to do, but they had to be done. And so I think they misappropriate McChrystal's character. But one thing Martin Dempsey points out is that they actually captured the battlefield bubble well. And basically that is, when you're a commander in a theater like Afghanistan or detached from Washington, it's easy to get into the mindset that your theater is the most important one.
Yeah.
And the movie, I guess, portrays that, how McChrystal wanted more troops, he wanted more money, more supplies, but Washington didn't give it to him because they were fighting a war in Iraq and other places. And so it shows that side of the war well, but that's probably all. Based on what I've read, I haven't seen it, but based on what I've read, that's probably the only accurate portrayal that they have in the movie.
I think I've seen one preview for it, and I've got a book that McChrystal wrote. I haven't read it yet. It's on my to-do list. It's on my summer reading list, which is bigger than what will actually happen. But I do hope to get to it. And so I'm very interested, actually, to read that, because I don't know a lot about him personally or, you know, a lot of that history. So I'm interested to read it. And I don't know that I would see this film, but it'd be interesting to read it and get some of his perspective on it. You know, I guess in one sense, if Brad Pitt's going to play you in a movie, it's kind of a compliment, right? He's considered like a handsome guy. But then if he's not portraying you like you actually were, that would be frustrating.
Yeah, and McChrystal, he's a very good soldier. He was fired by Barack Obama because of an article that Michael Hastings, the reporter, wrote for Rolling Stone showed some things that were being not done very well in Afghanistan.
That's
so
right. Yeah.
It was made such a big deal that President Obama summoned him to Washington and fired him. So that's why McChrystal was relieved of command. And so the movie revolves around that event, what led up to his firing and everything. And just brings up an interesting point that sometimes we always want to find the blame for why we don't win wars in America. And some we point at politicians, the media, and the military does have some blame in failure. But I think the movie puts too much blame on McChrystal, on the soldiers there. And the person who wrote the article actually doesn't agree with my take on it. But based on what I've read, we went to Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden and the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. That's why we were there. We're still there today because it's such a difficult situation there. It's a graveyard of empires. No one's ever conquered Afghanistan. So how do we do it? And it's a very difficult situation. It's not really anyone's fault. it's kind of an impossible mission, but the American soldiers did it the best they could. And in circumstances where the enemy, the population hated them, and as we've talked about before, how the moral culture that the Americans were put into is very difficult to work in. Like the story of how an Afghan soldier raped an Afghan boy. A Green Beret, decorated Green Beret, confronted him about it, shoved him on the ground because the Iraqi or the Afghan was laughing at him for correcting him about it. And then the Green Beret got recalled because he can't do that. So, I mean, that's the climate these soldiers work in. And that climate is dictated by in Washington. So, I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm sure the military has blame, and we shouldn't think of every soldier isn't a hero. But because some soldiers make mistakes, some are in scandals, that kind of thing. But most of them are. Most of them do their duty. Most of them are brave, and they're there defending us and defending the Afghans from the Taliban. So it's just kind of a, I don't know, I think it's the wrong movie at the wrong time, personally.
Yeah, there's the expression of the armchair quarterback, you know, or the Monday morning quarterback. You know, you didn't play in the game because obviously you're just watching it, but you know what everybody should have done on the field. And that's what some of these movies are like, you know, where I don't know how much information, say, the director would have or whatever. But, you know, for us as the audience that would watch it, most of us haven't gone and experienced anything like that ourselves. So it's easy to watch this show unfold in the comfort of your home and then formulate all your opinions about a very difficult situation based on really a fantasy about it. Or, you know, maybe there's some truth in it, but a lot of other things going on. And very few people would actually go back and say, huh, I'm interested in that. I want to get some other viewpoints on it. Typically, you watch it and you move on, but it doesn't form our opinions or our thoughts about it. And a lot of times they're not good, because the ones we've seen more recently try to show, like, the gritty side of it and take sort of that anti-hero view, like he was, you know, these are bad people, that, you know, like American soldiers in a way, and they're very conflicted in all this. And it might be somewhat true, but I don't know what that does for morale or what that does for the nation in general.
Exactly. Why even make a movie like that? There have been plenty of great war movies where they clearly point out what was done wrong, like Black Hawk Down or Saving Private Ryan. Mistakes were obviously made, but they focus on the heroism of the soldiers. If you're just going to make a negative movie, I mean, it's almost like covering the Vietnam War. Maybe you should just confine things like that to a documentary where you look at the historical facts, you analyze what went wrong, and then you say exactly how it could be done better the next time, instead of just being negative and portraying soldiers in an unfair way or even generals. It doesn't seem like there's much of a great purpose for that.
Yeah, I mean, we don't obviously all wake up every morning and have the intelligence report that the president gets, like, in our mailbox. So we can see everything that's going on and make opinions about it. They can't do that. It wouldn't be wise. But then after the fact, everyone likes to chuck their stones at situations, and we don't know the half of what went on in most cases or why, or, you know, there's a lot more to it, I'm sure, than they put in these movies.
Yeah, and that's the problem with movies in general, is that, especially for military operations, they're very complex. So if there's a movie about it, no matter what movie, they always simplify them so much so that they're not a real example of war. They're so simplified that that's not how war really is. And the same thing with this movie. And they have artistic license and all that stuff. And I mean, Brad Pitt can make whatever movie he wants. It's his right. However, it's up. The audience has to be informed, and they should not allow a movie to be the sole basis for their political opinion. And that's it. But I think this movie does show the power that media has, especially movies, because they do have a huge influence in how we view history, how we view politics, more so than they should. Movies aren't factual. They're entertainment. They're not, this like the comedy shows. They're not something you go to get informed and make really important decisions or opinions. They're just there for your entertainment, to forget about so you can go look at more important things.
But they've tried to take on that role, like the comedy shows or like anything. And that's what's dangerous about it, because just like late night ratings, if you're going to make a movie and you want to continue to work, you're going to have to make it that
where enough of your peer group approves of it and says, yeah, we like what you did there, that it fits what we're trying to say. If you made something that came out and was against what the very liberal Hollywood media supports, you wouldn't last long. You wouldn't work there. It's an intimidation.
And there's also some show producers or movie producers who are pretty opportunistic, knowing that people are less willing to maybe get involved with the news. And so they inject their own personal beliefs into whatever they're producing that's meant for entertainment, because they're trying to influence people as well, knowing that they're turning away from the traditional news sources.
Really fascinating. It's a new movie coming out, War Machine, looking at some of the, well, their take on what happened in Afghanistan and some other places. So lots happening there. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turch, and Abraham Blondo. Enjoy your weekend. Have a great one. Key David Program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and Trumpet Hour Week in Review coming your way. Thanks for spending some time with us. We'll talk to you again on Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.